From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
This is Jeff Yang, sitting in today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC AM, FM, and WNYC.org. Now, many of you have followed the story of Kavya Viswanathan, the Indian-American Harvard sophomore whose budding career as a young literary superstar was cut short by revelations that she'd plagiarized large portions of her book, How Opal Mehta Got Kissed, Got Wild, and Got a Life. One issue that hasn't really gotten enough attention is the degree to which sky-high parental expectations may have paved the way for Kavya's missteps. So today we wanted to talk about whether putting young people in high-pressure situations is helpful or harmful, and how it's really shaping higher education today. So with me now today by phone are Jane Kim, co-author of the book Top of the Class, How Asian Parents Raise High Achievers and How You Can Too, and Lloyd Thacker, founder of the Education Conservancy, and a veteran of nearly 28 years in the college admissions and college counseling professions. We'll also be taking your calls here at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. And Jane, Lloyd, welcome to the Leonard Lopate Show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to be here.
Well, you know, it's kind of a good time to be talking about this because, after all, this is May. People are trying to get out of school now and thinking of the summer ahead. So I wanted to begin with you, Lloyd. Here's the big question. How much pressure is too much? Is there really a fine line between, you know, just wanting your kids to succeed and putting too much pressure on them? Can encouraging your children to succeed really backfire?
Well, I'm not sure that anybody's an expert on what is too much pressure, but the things that we can measure, like levels of student stress related to the anxiety of the college admissions process, are higher than they've ever been. And we have lots of anecdotal information, evidence about this, and it certainly is a problem. Certainly, there are a group of students for whom the pressures to achieve or perform are beyond the bounds of educational rationality.
So, you know, as far as the question of success, I mean, Jane, the book that you and your sister wrote, Top of the Class, really does kind of frame the narrative in a slightly different light. And, you know, the idea of parental expectation and parental pressures as being kind of a positive thing in children's lives is something that you very much put at the forefront. Tell us a little bit about your perspective on that, both personal and as an author.
You know, I really think that, you know, the way that I was raised and the way that success is framed on Top of the Class is that, you know, it is very individual. I want to start off by saying that, you know, Top of the Class really does talk about ways that you can maximize your educational achievement. It doesn't talk about success in terms of, you know, personal fulfillment. So, I mean, it doesn't really cover all facets of success. But one thing that's very strong in the Asian culture is that there is that emphasis on education and academic achievement. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I do agree with Lloyd. I think there's a fine line between putting too much pressure on your kids. But I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, just having open lines of communication, having unrealistic expectations with your kids. There are ways to alleviate that pressure.
At the same time, the book does discuss things like, you know, sort of eliminating distractions, meaning extraneous extracurriculars and so forth, and really focusing on this idea of academic achievement. Is this something which you really feel you know, going to shape a student to be the wholest possible child they can be?
Well, you know, the book does talk about limiting extracurricular activities. You know, in no ways does it endorse eliminating extracurricular activities. It does say in there that it is very important for a kid to have some sort of outlet besides just their academics. You know, there are a lot of very beneficial things to extracurricular activities, such as, you know, finding other interests that the child is that the child wants to pursue, in addition to a lot of real world benefits such as, you know, what it means to be a part of a team, you know, developing interpersonal skills. I think that it is common sense though that if you're juggling a dozen extracurricular activities, you're not going to be really doing a great job at any of them, much less your schoolwork.
Lloyd, do you agree with this? Do you feel that kind of an emphasis on academics first is really critical to, you know, again, shaping a student's kind of forward personality and forward perspective? Or do you feel like, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, really, I guess, reaching out and doing as many things as possible?
I appreciate the question. I think we really need to be careful about what it is that we value and who we rely on and the signals we send and receive about education. And the question is, you know, what are and should be the educational values which drive us? And in search of answers to these kinds of questions, I put together a book called College Unranked, which is an essay, a group of essays from college presidents and deans. And lo and behold, many of them came from highly ranked colleges and were willing to, in essence, speak beyond their own institutional self-interest to a cause greater than their own institution self-interest, a cause that I call studenthood. And that is, let's try to see what kinds of issues are raised around the public interest good idea of what education is and how it should be defined and what values it should encompass. And it's fascinating. People from really competitive colleges said such things such as, you know, the pressures we place on kids often have unintended consequences of delaying their maturing and their finding their own selves and discovering their own paths. So I think it's important who we rely on to define education for us. And I don't think it's really that tricky to trust ourselves in coming up with definitions of education. Education's been around for a long time, and education succeeds because students are curious and they're imaginative and those kinds of things. And I'm very concerned about where pressure and excess pressure exhibited by forces external to education, such as the ranksters, et cetera.
Lloyd, I mean, you know, would you say that there's something kind of novel about this? Do you think that, you know...
Oh, absolutely.
Baby boomers or something are putting more pressure on the kids?
I would say that the commercialization of college admissions has created a crisis by undermining educational values. And that policies and practices of parents, of schools, and colleges that were once formulated according to educational criteria, they've been supplanted by private sector mechanisms, and that there's an increasing disconnect between educational values and admission practices. And then those practices are the parents and the high schools and the students and the colleges. And this disconnect is having serious consequences for a growing group of students.
I'm Jeff Yang. I'm sitting in here for Leonard Lopate, and we're talking with Jane Kim, author of the book Top of the Class, How Asian Parents Raise High Achievers, and Lloyd Thacker, founder of the Education Conservancy, about the issue of parental pressure and parental expectations and how that may be shaping the next generation of college students. Actually, you know, we have a call now that I'd like to bring in. It's actually a student at SUNY Purchase who wants to talk a little bit about her experience that he's actually having right now himself. Corey, you're on the line with Leonard Lopate?
I'm a philosophy major. I have about a year left to graduate. I called almost immediately when I heard the topic. I mean, we just finished finals. I just handed in my last paper like yesterday. And what I've noticed is a couple of things. One is professors seem to be giving an increasing amount of work. The expectations, it's almost like because students have been kind of pretending they're okay with it, professors are giving more and more work, and students are continuing to attempt to pretend they can handle it, and the problem is they can't. I mean, I had friends of mine, you know, completely freaking out these past couple weeks and having, like, you know, nervous breakdowns and everything because they can't get this work done. I mean, I had a professor this semester who would give us 100 pages to read and expect it to be done in 2 days and then wonder why it wasn't done.
So, Corey, do you feel like your own background, your own, I guess, parental environment and so forth, prepared you properly for this kind of workload, or do you feel like it would have made a difference if your parents had kind of worked you harder as a high schooler?
Well, I mean, I was kind of raised in an academic household. I mean, my dad has, you know, a master's degree in English, and my mother always raised me that it wasn't as important to get the grades, but more importantly, do all your work. Of course, the joke is that if you do all your work, you'll get the grades. But I felt then that that didn't prepare me as much, because when I got to college, I realized that actually, if you do all the work, you don't necessarily get the grades. I was taught it, but I feel as though, you know, the students who were, you know, who used to in high school, you know, literally be in tears because they'd get a B+ and not an A. You know, they were almost better prepared because, yeah, they're, you know, a little, you know, neurotic and obsessive compulsive about it. They are getting the grades. And I feel as though actually it's a problem for me, because I feel as though me, you know, doing the work at a human pace, you know, doing the best that I can, you know, not, you know, trying to, you know, is actually a problem, because now I'm seen as a slacker when I'm doing a human amount of work and not competing.
So, you know, I'm kind of hearing two things here, and I'd like to turn this back actually to Lloyd and Jane. But on the one hand, we have Corey, who's currently a college student, talking about how it might actually have been an advantage if his parents had pushed him a little harder and made him, you know, sort of a little more aware of the kind of competitive environment that he'd be facing in college. Yet at the same time, it doesn't really sound that healthy for college students, or high school students for that matter, to be receiving this kind of level of expectation and this level of workload. And, you know, Lloyd, I mean, would you agree that that maybe there's almost something, you know, problematic about kids actually bursting into tears and getting a B+ in high school?
Absolutely. Incidences of stress and anxiety related to the college admissions process has doubled in the past 3 years at the high-end colleges. That's a fact, okay? What I find even more troubling is that we've been talking about this for 10, 15 minutes, and learning and education have not been mentioned.
That's
what's very disturbing to me. And it's not only disturbing to me, but it's disturbing to a growing group of college presidents. In fact, a group of whom will meet in New York, right near you, at this summer to discuss college admissions in the public interest. In other words, what can college presidents do to push back on this market frenzy that's sending signals to kids and driving them to approach education as a product rather than a process that one engages in.
That's a really good point right there, that there may be a little bit of a kind of cart leading the horse here as far as grades versus and achievement versus learning and education. And you know, Jane, I mean, I think that's one thing that we've seen as criticism out there. You know, that to a certain extent, this orientation towards achievement really means achievement in terms of numbers, in terms of letters, in terms of statistics, and not necessarily in terms of fulfillment and you know, sort of embracing the idea of learning and knowledge for its own sake.
Right. You know, I think, you know, the very first chapter that we talk about in the book is entitled "To Instill a Love in Learning," a love and need for learning and education. And I think that, you know, today in today's cutthroat society, especially in terms of, you know, the college admissions process, a lot of parents are raising kids that don't really have that. But that really is the basis for, you know, future success in school and in the workplace. You know, I think that a lot of people think that, you know, if you get into an Ivy League school such as Harvard, then, you know, that's, you automatically have, you know, the stamp of success. But I think the real issue here is that, you know, parents that raise their kids to love learning and education, you know, they really strive to be a high achiever, and they end up getting into a place like Harvard, and they become successful afterwards, not because they went to Harvard, but because they have that love and need for learning and education.
Well, you know, I want to talk about that a little bit more, obviously, this whole idea that, you know, getting into a quote-unquote name college may actually make a significant difference in people's lives. I also want to actually remind people that, you know, the phone lines are open. The number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, and we want to hear from you to, you know, get a sense for what you feel about this whole issue of parental expectation, external pressure in general, and the competitive environment that we're seeing in the sort of educational marketplace. And I know that using that term is probably going to just, you know, send off all sorts of bad signals to you right there, Lloyd, right?
Well, I think this is a fascinating and extremely important topic, and one that I've dedicated my life to. Somehow I think I'm a willing victim of education. But I have serious doubts that a recipe for education success can or should be imposed by anybody. And I think if you look around at leaders, and I mean people who are making a difference, creating companies, changing minds, establishing trends, contributing to society, these are not those people who were necessarily driven to get high SAT scores, good extracurricular activities, a resume, a track record, a dynamic essay, or to attend a prestigious, highly ranked college.
Well, now, Lloyd, actually, we've got to take a little break here. Well, we'll continue this thought. I'm Jeff Yang. I'm sitting here for Leonard Lopate on WNYC AM, FM, and WNYC.org. And we're talking to Jane Kim, author of Top of the Class, and Lloyd Thacker, founder of the Education Conservancy. Stick around.
Listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jeff Yang. I'm here today for Leonard Lopate, and we're talking with Jane Kim, author of the book Top of the Class, How Asian Parents Raise High Achievers, and You Can Too, and Lloyd Thacker, the founder of the Education Conservancy, about this this larger issue of competitive pressures and how they're sort of shaping and potentially helping or hurting our next generation of high school students. I actually wanted to go to a call now. I've got Maggie in Westport, who herself is a parent and is talking about, you know, how it is that even beginning in fifth grade, you have sort of competitive pressures beginning to shape, you know, her son and her son's peers' lives. Maggie, tell us a little about your situation.
Yeah, hi. Well, it's funny. I immediately swerved off the road when I heard this program because I wanted to call in because yesterday I was part of a group of parents at my son's elementary school. He's completing fifth grade in about a month. And they do a very good thing at this school, which is to bring parents together with the school psychologist to talk about managing issues, managing stresses. And this was in particular about managing the stress of transition to middle school. And what all of us parents immediately found ourselves talking about is just how the stress gets ratcheted up after fifth grade in a serious fashion. And how it really, and this question of, you know, well, whose educational values are these? Because all of us are concerned about our children having the opportunity to make their own mistakes, to try things, and to discover who they really are in the process, what their real metal is. And already, I mean, the choices are such, for example, with my son, he can take Spanish or French next year. Well, he's taken 6 years of Spanish so far. He wants to take French. And I've mentioned this to other parents, not in this group that I was with yesterday, and they already are thinking about, oh, no, but then you won't have as many years of Spanish to take the SAT. And so already people are thinking in the sixth grade about how their kids are going to be positioned for the all-important SAT in 11th grade. And I'm thinking, boy, I'd like to have my son have the chance to be a student abroad as an exchange student to learn more about the world, because certainly all of us Americans need to know more about the world and understand other cultures.
That's definitely something I have a lot of personal empathy for, because back in the fifth grade when that same question was coming up, French or Spanish, my parents were like, well, I think you'll take both. But, you know, that's actually something I want to bring back to Lloyd and Jane here, you know, this sort of issue of, you know, how early this pressure is beginning to be placed upon kids and, you know, what that really means for the development of kids' personalities and social lives and the other things that are important in their lives. Lloyd, what do you think about this increasing sort of early stage preparations happening for colleges?
Well, first I want to congratulate your caller and encourage her to trust her own educational sensibilities, because there's no better expert than that. Despite what the cocktail circuit soccer mom type mentality might impose on you, believe in your educational sensibilities. A good childhood lasts forever. And let me tell you, those students who are allowed to make mistakes, to find their own way, to develop a connection with learning, a relationship with learning that goes beyond performance, those kids not only do the best in school, but they do the best in the admissions process.
Well,
that's a fact.
That's a kind of important point there. I think also the caller brought up something about educational values. And Jane, you know, I imagine this is something that's pretty much at the core of your book. It's certainly something which I recognize personally. You know, I mean, we're both Asian American. We're both children of immigrants. And,
right.
You know, there's definitely this different set of priorities there. And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, you yourself talk about in the book how you initially, you know, weren't really that interested in academics. That wasn't your primary goal. And, you know, I'm just kind of wondering whether or not you ever feel like you, you know, regret the path that you were actually led down.
Well, I want to address one thing really quickly that Lloyd had brought up. You know, I do think at a very young age, parents have the most influence in terms of how their child will view education. And I think that that's really important because, I mean, there's so many external factors that can influence your child, but your child is your own, and it is a product of the way that you view education. However, I really differ with Lloyd in terms of just stressing your effort. I think that it's very different in Asian American culture, in that I think that the effort needs to be stressed, but I also think the achievement needs to be stressed. You know, in today's society, is an extremely competitive society. What used to be a high school degree, now everyone requires a bachelor's degree for most jobs. And I think we're doing our children a big disservice by not saying, hey, number one, we need the effort there, but we can't forget about the achievement.
So in the words of a very wise man, it's do or not do. There is no try, more or less. But, you know, you actually bring up another point, which I think is important, that we're not simply competing within kind of a closed room here. You know, there is an entire another world out there. There's an entire another, you know, global space out there that we're kind of entering into.
Right.
And certainly as Asian Americans, you know, we see both sides of that. I just wanted to bring in another caller here who thinks that, you know, to a certain degree, we may be not preparing ourselves properly for that global environment. Damien in White Plains?
Yes. It's interesting. I work with international high school students every year. And the thing that I'm finding, I'll give you one example. We had a student from China. We had a fairly good idea that he was smart. And then we saw him on 60 Minutes, and he was one of the top students in the top schools in all of China. And the knowledge that he had puts him leaps and bounds further than the other people, even in our gifted program that drew gifted American students. And they're competing for positions in high schools. They're competing for positions with American consulting companies. So where is the next generation of truly bright, truly gifted, hard-driving Americans going to come from if we're not pushing people starting early?
Lloyd, do you have any thoughts about this?
I mean, You bet. I have nothing against achievement per se, but achievement needs to be measured. And I think many of us would agree that the predictors and indicators of good education are knowable, but they're very tough to measure. And so once we focus strictly on achievement, then we focus on those things that are measurable, and we're not often measuring the things that are valuable. We're valuing those things that are measurable. I don't mean to be trite here.
Yeah, but speaking as a person who's been involved in, you know, I went to Brooklyn Tech, and then I went, even starting, I think, in seventh grade, Mark Twain, it was always a competitive school. You're always taking tests, always trying to get on to the next thing.
Sure.
And that certainly led to a different mentality. I mean, to be honest with you, when I go and visit some non-specialized schools, not the Stuyvesants, the Hunters, and the Bronx Sciences,
right.
I am amazed at the difference in educational attitude. And I think one of the big differences is that the people who get into the specialized schools come from families where the parents push them for achievement, measurable achievement.
Let me differ a little bit with you. Allow me to. Professor at Columbia University, well-known professor, said to Lloyd, coffee with him. Lloyd We have a group of kids that we're told have the highest SAT scores we've ever had, average SAT scores, highest GPA, average GPA we've ever had. But in my class, they are the least connected group of kids I've ever chatted with, I've ever taught.
So, the anecdotal information is interesting, but at the end of the day, if you have to devise an educational system that is designed to take in millions of students per year and create high levels of achievement, you can't govern by anecdote.
No, you can't, but you can be informed by that, and you have to be responsible enough to realize that you can make decisions based on things other than the measurable. And that's one of the reasons why admission deans are having to come to grips with what do these numbers really do? Do they help us make better decisions, or do they make our decision-making process easier?
Well,
certainly you have to look at something. But how do you measure imagination? How do you measure creativity? How do you measure passion for learning? These are the things that you and I would agree are indispensable, not only for good education, but for being a leader, for being a creator, for being somebody who has an impact on society.
Well, now let's take that conversation in a sort of extend it along that line. And thank you again, Damien, for your call. When we talk about measurement, when we talk about this whole idea of trying to quantify, you know, success and so forth, I mean, at the end of the day, there isn't a lot of there aren't a lot of tools out there to tell us really whether somebody's going to be more successful simply because, or not even more successful, but even just better people or happier people.
Absolutely.
Based on whether or not they succeed in their grades or in SATs. And, you know, that's one thing which really kind of comes to mind when we're talking about these issues. And, Jane, I mean, you know, I mentioned before that, you know, in the book you kind of discuss how initially your priorities weren't necessarily academics, and you actually had a very different kind of goal or dream for yourself. You wanted to be a magazine writer, to explore like a creative world, and you know, and at the same time, you were kind of sidetracked from that. And you know, I'm just wondering whether or not you ever feel like you could have had a better life, a more fulfilling life, if you had simply pursued those dreams instead of the ones that your parents had kind of imposed on you.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of Asian Americans out there can kind of relate to my experience growing up. You know, I grew up with parents that came from South Korea, so I had a lot of the you know, kind of the Korean culture instilled in me, but I also consider myself American. And so I kind of had this dual vision of what success would be for myself. You know, I wanted to be popular like a lot of, you know, middle and high school students were. You know, I wanted to be well-liked in school, but I also wanted to make good grades. And for me, that was my idea of success. I think that getting back to your question, of, you know, what I wanted to do by the time I graduated from college was that, you know, I didn't know. You know, I was in that situation with a lot of college students that, you know, kind of had an idea of what interested them, but didn't really know what career to go into. And so what happened with me was I decided that, you know, I wanted to pursue at least writing. You know, I was very interested in writing. I was very interested in international affairs. I took a year off after college. You know, my parents were not very happy about that. You know, I kind of held a couple of different jobs as an office assistant and, you know, also as an editor. And, you know, I was pretty directionless. And I think that instead of saying that, you know, my parents really forced me, you know, down a career path, you know, they definitely encouraged me. You know, I spoke with a lot of individuals who were in the field of law. But I made a decision for myself that I knew that, you know, I was very interested in writing and I was very interested in, you know, the international aspects of the legal system. But, you know, I'm grateful that my parents, you know, kind of showed me that, you know, this is one area that you can actually focus, you know, your talents and your interests in.
Well, it's really interesting because on some level I'm hearing voices in my head, sort of flashbacks, you know, to my own parents as recently as like 2 years ago telling me exactly the same thing. And, you know, I have to say there's a sense of almost you're the road not traveled for me. I did personally pursue a, you know, creative profession and creative aims, and that's why I guess I'm sitting here in this chair talking to you guys. But you know, in a larger perspective, my parents, instead of saying, well, you know, in order to be successful by our standards, you have to go out and do the things that we think are successful careers, they said, look, you do what you need to do, you are passionate about, and try to be the best you are at that, we'll support you. Of course, remember that if you ever want to go to law school, we'll pay for it. I mean, that's that's the way they presented it. And I'm just wondering, you know, did you ever get that, or is that something which is, you know, alien to kind of the perspective you're coming from?
Well, my parents were actually very supportive. That's not to say that they didn't have expectations. You know, a lot of my, you know, non-Asian friends kind of joke around with me and say that, you know, their definition of an Asian slacker is somebody who, you know, is very, very much a high achiever. And, you know, growing up in my household, that was no different. But they were supportive in the sense that, you know, they had very realistic expectations. You know, I was maybe a atypical, you know, Asian student in that, you know, I really struggled in the terms of, in the areas of math and science. And, you know, if I brought home a C on a report card, you know, they knew that I was trying my best, and they were very supportive in that way. But, you know, I think in terms of, you know, kind of guiding me down a certain career path, you know, definitely, you know, somewhere in the back of their mind they were thinking, you know, we want our daughter to be financially secure. We do want her to have job security. I think that, you know, I am a very atypical lawyer, you know, and my parents, I think if they really wanted to kind of push me down that prototypical path in the legal profession, you know, I am an immigration specialist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So I'm very, you know, I'm not a corporate attorney. I don't really command a huge salary. And they really did have a lot of respect for, you know, what field I wanted to go into.
Well, you know, to that end, we really have to sort of, you know, look at the textures, I guess, involved when in choice of career. You're right in that the kind of lawyer you are is not perhaps that kind of high-powered corporate attorney that is almost like the fetish of many Asian parents' dreams. But at the same time, I mean, you know, you could have been a struggling artist. You could have been, you know, somebody who was pursuing writing the great Asian-American novel, and you didn't, you know, clearly didn't do that, choose that path. I guess one of the things that I'm also wondering, and we have actually a caller here who is going to discuss this, is, you know, even if you are going to pursue that high-powered, achievement-oriented path, is the idea of really kind of placing people in a highly competitive, highly, you know, pressured environment the best way to do so? We've got somebody, Judy in Queens, she's an HR director, who says that, in fact, there may actually be a disconnect there. There may actually be something else going on. Judy?
Hi. Yeah, what I found is that when you bring people who are super competitive, and I think any workplace is competitive and that's not a bad thing, when their expectations are so high and they've been driven and anything that is not perfect is considered failure, they don't necessarily do well in a work environment. They don't handle teamwork very well. They don't handle it well when their own ideas aren't agreed upon. They don't take anything that's not 100% perfect is considered a failure by them, and for anybody else in corporate America, it's considered great if 10% of your ideas get through. And it creates tremendous problems in the workplace, whereas people who are raised with a love of learning and get their achievement that way seem to do better.
Well, now, thank you so much, Judy, for that. You know, it's interesting because one of the things that you say, Jane, is that that love of learning is really what it's all about, that's what the parental expectation side that you're talking about in your book is sort of attempting to instill.
Right. I mean, I definitely agree that if you don't have that love of learning, you know, you won't be successful. You know, what we were talking about a few minutes earlier was that, you know, getting a degree from Harvard, that doesn't guarantee success. I mean, that might get your foot in the door, but really what guarantees your success is, you know, your interpersonal skills, you know, your substantive knowledge, and just the fact that you want to continue learning and you want to continue to receive education.
Well, you know, I think this is obviously an ongoing conversation that we're having, and one that I think this next generation of kids is living, and you know, to a certain extent, the proof of this particular pudding is going to be in the eating. So, you know, we'll see where it goes in the next generation and in the next 10 years. In the meantime, I wanted to thank both you guys, Jane Kim, co-author of Top of the Class, and Lloyd Thacker, director of the Education Conservancy, for being with us on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.